Billions of years ago, a race of immortals harnessed the most powerful force in existence, the emerald energy of willpower. These immortals, the guardians of the universe, built a world from where they could watch over all of existence, the planet Oa. They divided the universe into 3,600 sectors. A ring powered by the energy of will was sent to every sector to select a recruit. In order to be chosen by the ring, it was said one must be without fear. Together, these 3,600 recruits formed the Intergalactic Peacekeepers, known as the Green Lantern Corps.
Episode of Emerald Echo, a Green Lantern podcast. As always, I'm your host, Adam, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Donnie. Donnie, how's it going?
What's up, everyone? It's the man who knows where Sinestro buys his mustache wax. It's the Emerald Enthusiast.
How's it going, buddy? You always come up with something entertaining at the start.
Well, I'm glad. That's what we're here to do, is entertain.
Indeed, we are. Everything is good in your corner of Space Sector 2814?
We are dealing with the threats as they come, so far successfully.
Yeah, same here. And let's hope that continues for not only ourselves, but all of our listeners. We've got a packed show today, starting off with a bit of news. So why don't we get to it?
Let's get to it.
All right. First up, we've got a little bit of Snyder Cut information to add from the last time we spoke.
Yes. So what I have heard, the consensus that I'm getting is that there wasn't initially, and I would say this, like, let's say the end of last year, there wasn't anything that you could term a different movie. There was just a lot of unfinished footage. And that's kind of always been my suspicion about the Snyder Cut. Now we're getting a commitment from WB to finish what is a very different movie, a very different version of Justice League.
Right. And I know the last time we spoke, we mentioned that there was a figure in the, at least the official figure in the Hollywood trades, in the range of 20 to 30 million. But in a recent Business Insider, I think it was, interview, the head honcho at HBO Max responded to that claim with, "I wish it was only 30 million. So clearly they're putting in a sizable investment here. I've heard a figure in the $50 to $70 million range. So
yeah, that's the budget for a lot of movies.
Yeah, and
entire, like, budget.
Think about it. You could make three indie films with that kind of money. So, but to be fair, I mean, Snyder did the entirety of the 300 movie with $65 million, and that was, you know, intensive CGI. So, I'm sure he can get a lot out of that that $50 to $70 million figure. Also, you know, what I think an increased budget is can only help our chances of seeing that Bruce Wayne sequence where he comes into contact with a couple of Green Lanterns.
That would be great. Whether it's that or whether they do have a couple of scenes with someone like Hal Jordan or John Stewart, regardless, just the fact that, you know, that Green Lantern is a part of this story in the present day, that we don't just right. see him as, you know, part of the war that happened with Steppenwolf back in the past, you know, that we get the yeah. idea that Earth is still important and that the Guardians and the Green Lantern Corps are still monitoring the situation.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I'm all for, seeing more, you know, Green Lantern content. So, so if they can work them in there, or if something was filmed with them, then let's see it. I know it probably won't carry over to the HBO Max series, but it's still fun to be able to see. And listen, if they're putting that much commitment into, you know, Zack Snyder's Justice League as it's being branded now, if that thing is wildly profitable for them, who knows what the future could entail? I mean, maybe Zach gets to continue his vision in, you know, in another miniseries kind of thing.
Well, I'll say this: you
nothing's
know,
nothing's off the table at this
sure,
point.
Sure, sure, and you know, something that's come out of this is that, you know, we're getting news that Henry Cavill is going to return, and yeah. so that leads me to believe we're going to see some movies with more connection. You know, whereas last year we were hearing that there were going to be more disconnected DC properties would be in the future, but now that doesn't seem to be the case. So
right.
I think a lot of good things could come out of the Snyder Cut, and let's hope we all enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, look, I know, see, me personally, I think, you know, I've recently done a rewatch of Man of Steel and BVS, so I've come around. And my opinion has done quite a bit of a 180 on both of those in a good way. And so, but even if there's a movie that, you know, there are parts of it that I don't particularly like, I'm the kind of person that can always find something in each of these movies that I can like. So
that's how I am with most comic book adaptations. It's rare that I see something that's adapted from a comic book and I think it's a complete wash, because if you have a popular comic out there, there's a reason. There's something there. There's something valid. So,
like, I can even say something positive. Not many things, but I can even say something positive about Batman and Robin if I'm forced to. So, there's that.
you know, nothing else. You know, Mr. Freeze singing the Snow Miser song, you know.
Well, my favorite part was the ending. The fact that the end credits started rolling and I said, thank God this is over. But... you know, there's other stuff in there that I I'm going to have to, when we eventually do a commentary on the Batman podcast. So I will have to pick out something else besides, hey, it's over. But you know, the point is, in situations where even if I think something is the worst of the worst, I can find something, you know, in there that I can pick apart and say, well, this was good at least. So yeah, so I'm looking forward to it, and I can't wait to see this, you know, according to Zach, entirely new thing. So let's see it.
Yeah, let's go.
But speaking of HBO Max, let's stick in that realm for a minute. We were talking the last time we recorded about how we didn't have much of an update. Well, now we have a little bit of an update. And from that same interview where we got, you know, the figure that the Snyder Cut is more than 30 million, it was also the subject about, you know, DC series on HBO Max was brought up, and Green Lantern was mentioned along with Justice League Dark. And what they said about both of those projects were that they are going to have movie-level production budgets and production quality. So, and the head honcho at HBO Max said, it's basically like you're seeing a movie each week.
Yeah, that's directly from HBO content chief Kevin Reilly. Right. That's a direct quote. So this is not just a rumor.
Right. Yeah, this is a definitive quote. And when I hear something like that, I'm like there are so many reasons, you know, to want to fast forward to 2021. These quotes are one of them. So How fast can I get to 2021 is the question.
Yeah, you know, if you had like one of those pods, like in the movie Alien, you know, with the Alien franchise, where you could just kind of go to sleep for 6 months and wake up. So yeah. I don't think my wife and kids would appreciate that, but it's still tempting.
Yeah, or we can call Barry Allen and hopefully he can, you know, he can speed us. He can, you know, he's known to mess around with time, so.
Yeah, why not throw it? You never know. Barry could make things worse, though.
that's true. But mind you, 2020 hasn't been that great. So I'm not even going to say can it get any worse because you never know. But
you never know. No.
Let's hope we hear some more good little tidbits in the coming weeks and months about the Green Lantern series, like you know who the leads are aside from Sinestro. Because we know that, but you know, let's hopefully we'll get a cast announcement relatively soon, and we'll dissect that, and then we'll go from there.
Sure, and hopefully, you know, we'll get lots of good constructs and lots of aliens this time that won't just be window dressing. That we get the full Green Lantern experience.
Absolutely, and that's the benefit I think of doing it on as a TV series. Is that extra time that you get to sit with the characters and explore? So, I'm ready for it.
Yeah, and with as much history as Green Lantern has, with so many different characters being involved in so many different types of stories and so many different eras, I love the fact that we're going to get a TV series, and it's again that they can explore different things going on at different times. Whereas, you know, with a movie, even if you have a trilogy, you're still in a little bit of a box. This can hopefully go on for many seasons, and we can get a really good flavor of the Green Lantern mythos.
Yeah, I'm very confident that we're going to get something special here. We are certainly eagerly anticipating more info. So, and we'll give you our thoughts on it when we have it. Just like we did today.
most definitely. You know, any Green Lantern news, any shows, we will be here to critique in great detail anything that comes out of the Green Lantern universe.
Absolutely, of course, that's what we're here for. Unfortunately, we have to shift gears to a little bit of a sad, not a little bit, quite a sad scenario, and it kind of ties into something we discussed in our last episode. So, Donnie, why don't you give us a little bit of background info on what I'm alluding to?
Well, we just want to take a couple of minutes to acknowledge the fact that, you know, here in the United States right now, there are, you know, riots and protests going on because we've seen a number of cases of African Americans being the victims of violence and just heinous bigotry. And it's very hard to watch. And in the comic book sense, I kept flashing back this week to, you know, John Stewart's origin. It's what Adam and I talked about last week with, you know, the young African American males being hassled by the police because they were playing dominoes. And, you know, John had to be the guy, you know, who steps up and he was, you know, he showed his bravery by being, you know, confrontational, you know, with one particular police officer. And of course the other officer is saying, you know, he's actually telling his partner, he was like, you know, what are you doing? But this week, you know, I saw that and it made me think about the brilliance of what Dennis O'Neill had written and the fact that, you know, Green Lantern was an amazing commentary about what was going on in the United States 50 years ago. And here we are, you know, that was 1971 and here we are in 2020 and we're still seeing that same theme kind of played out. So, yeah. You know, we just want to say that, you know, our heart goes out to everyone who has been involved in, you know, these heartbreaking situations that have cost them family members and their sense of safety. And we hope today that we can provide everyone with a little bit of escapism. And so what are your thoughts on that, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, it's even being here in Canada and watching that stuff, you know, on the news feeds, it's terrible to see, and it's, you know, part of it's unbelievable to think that, you know, bigotry and racism exists on that level still. I mean, nothing at this point should shock me, but you know, I tend to have, you know, more hope in humanity than maybe I'm naive that way, but you know, I just, and then, you know, there's no way you can justify those type of scenes, that type of behavior. We're supposed to trust in you know, in people in uniform and of that nature. We're supposed to, you know, feel like they have our back, and for a specific group of people to have to almost be in fear of the people that are supposed to protect them is just, it's an untenable situation. And you know, I just think that what I hope, you know, because I have faith in all of our listeners, that you know, that I like to believe that they're all good, upstanding people who believe in what's right and what's just. Because if you're a fan of any of these characters, that's how you should, that should be your modus operandi, you know, in life. And
Well,
so,
I'm sure that our listeners would never, you know, our listeners are just amazing. So, yeah.
of course, yeah. But no, so what I challenge. What my challenge to our listeners and you know, and fans of this material is to, you know, there's only so much that we can do. I mean, you know, in that particular, in the particular situation we're kind of speaking to, but I think what we can do in our own circles and in our own communities is to reinforce the exact opposite of that behavior that we're seeing.
Good
So,
point.
you
Yes.
know, in your own communities, like I always say on this show, you know, we have to be, you know, protectors and you know, quote unquote, Green Lanterns in our own little pockets in our own communities. And how to do that in this situation is, you know, show love, show compassion. It doesn't matter what race, color, or creed you are, you know, or what your sexual orientation is. Just treat others exactly as they are, another human being, and be respectful, be kind, lend a hand when you can, and just, you know, make someone feel good, remind somebody that, you know, they're worth it. And I think if you do all those little things, like I said, you may not be able to affect that one situation that we're seeing on a grand scale, but you know, if everybody did their little part that they can do over time, you know, I hope we'll, you know, that would bring about change. And so that's what I implore people to do. Of course, if there are funds, like, you know, if there are, I know there's some kind of fund set up, that there's donations are being taken. I'm not sure exactly what it is, but if you're in a position where you can donate something, then, you know, by all means, God bless you, do that. But if you can't, do whatever you can in your community to sort of stop this kind of behavior and to rise above it. And I think if we all do that, slowly but surely, a light will shine through this darkness that seems to still be in the world this many years later. So
Well,
that's my hope.
as T'Challa said at the end of Black Panther, we must learn to look after one another as if we were one single tribe.
Exactly, and they couldn't have said it better. So let's push forward to a more positive world, hopefully in the near future. And to that end, let's talk about some things that do give us escape and hope for a brighter tomorrow, shall we? And that's some comic books.
Yes, indeed. Okay, everyone, time to charge your rings, and we're going to go back in time to showcase number 22, 1959. And for any Green Lantern fan, that should definitely ring a bell, because that is the origin of Hal Jordan. Now, for people who may have come on board with Green Lantern, whether it was, you know, during Volume 3 or Volume 4 or even the more recent volumes, let me set the stage for you a little bit when it comes to the Silver Age. There was a man named Frederick Wortham, who was a psychiatrist who wrote a book called Seduction of the Innocent. And this book put forth the notion that comics were directly responsible for juvenile delinquency. And, you know, comics were viewed as a lowbrow medium by literary purists at the time, so they were a very easy target. There were congressional hearings that led to the Comics Code Authority in 1954. And if you see old comics, you will see that they're the Comics Code Authority. And it put strict regulations on comic books, which really hurt the industry. And that's why a lot of people viewed Frederick Wortham as a bigger villain than Galactus and Darkseid combined. Well, you know, I even heard that, like, in the 70s, he tried to make amends a little bit and went to a couple Comic Cons and was not greeted warmly. So
I'm sure that. Listen, when George Clooney is greeted better than you, you know you've screwed up royally. So yeah, I can imagine. I can imagine he wasn't the convention's favorite son at the time. That's for sure.
No, definitely not. And well, you know, and a lot of comics went under, especially things like Tales from the Crypt, that had a lot of adult material. They couldn't survive. So that was 5 years before the debut of Hal Jordan in Showcase number 22 and the introduction of the Green Lantern Corps. So the reason why I put all this forward is that things that you will note that differ from modern comics is that the violence is minimal, especially when it came to weapons. Gore was off limits. Horror characters were off limits, as was sexuality. Women were mandated to be depicted realistically. There couldn't be any attention drawn to their physical appearance because, according to the thought, you know, people like Wortham at the time, that would needlessly trigger erotic feelings in boys. And women couldn't be too independent because characters like Wonder Woman led to lesbianism in girl readers. Again, I'm not saying I agree with any of this. I just want to put this out there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and, you know, to all of our listeners who are gay or bisexual or non-binary, I just want to say I'm sorry. I just want to give you a historical overview here to show the kind
of... We don't agree with that position, but that was a position at the time, yeah.
You have to understand some of the thematic censorship that was going on at the time when Green Lantern was born. So I had to put that out there because a lot of people find Silver Age comics a little jarring sometimes. So
So
you know, the early stories, you get this dichotomy between good and evil. Villains rarely have any kind of sustained success because that would be viewed as advocating evil. So, and we get a lot of strong moral themes. You know, Showcase number 22, let's go there. DC editor Julius Schwartz wanted a sci-fi title, and John Broome, the writer, and artist Gil Kane wanted to recreate a former title with a space-based title. Now, we have mentioned Alan Scott before, and he preceded Hal Jordan as the titular character Green Lantern, but it was a very different type of story. So, Showcase 22, there's a very famous image of Hal in flight over Coast City blasting a yellow missile, and we see that the story point of the yellow impurity right away. And on the introductory page, readers are told that Hal is known for his lack of fear. Go ahead, sir.
Certainly, they really key in on that yellow. They really set it up, the yellow impurity, I mean, immediately.
That features prominently quite often.
Yeah, it was actually pretty, I'm like, oh, they're just planting that seed right off the, you know, right out of the get-go. I mean, they're dropping hints. And again, we, you know, every time they describe, it's funny because you know, I think they even use the phrase "man without fear," right, or something along those similar track. And when I hear that, I mean, I know that Hal is fearless, but when I hear, you know, that grouping of words together, I think Daredevil. So for a second, I was like, wait a minute,
right?
what universe am I reading? What podcast am I doing again? I have to make sure. Okay, no, I am reading the right book. But yeah, it was kind of funny. I'm like, hey, and look, I don't mind thinking about that because I actually like Daredevil as a character. He's one of my favorite Marvel characters. So it works. But yeah,
Daredevil's a very interesting character. We don't have time to get into that today. But
yeah, we'll do it some other time. We'll do it.
Sure. Yeah. But yeah, that's one of the central character aspects with the Green Lantern Corps is that we're often told that they're either naturally fearless or during the selection process, eventually we see the phrase, you have the ability to overcome great fear.
Right.
So with this story, we see a crashed spacecraft, and inside of that is a dying alien who any Green Lantern fan should know, that is Abin Sur. And that is a death that has not been undone. Now, we did see him in Blackest Night. He was
don't jinx it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you never know. So, but yeah, so we see in the story that he's dying, and he invokes the selection process, and that's still a Green Lantern theme, where when one ring bearer dies, we see a new one. The ring seeks out a new Green Lantern. And in this instance, the Green Power Battery sends out a blast of energy to find a new bearer. So readers are treated to a classic strong-jawed man in a flightless simulator, and of course, that is Hal Jordan. He's caught in the energy of the power battery and transported to Abin Sur. He finds this a little disconcerting, as you might expect.
I would assume so. I mean, if he casually, oh, look, there's a dying alien. Yeah, this is everyday stuff for me. I would have been concerned. I would be like, well,
yeah, you know, if
what
you were,
circles do you hang out in, sir?
Yeah, you know, if you were swimming or something and you were caught in like a green energy bubble and it just, you know, lifted you a few hundred miles somewhere and, you know, dropped you off in the middle of the desert, you might have a few questions. So
yeah, just a couple.
Yeah, so Hal and Abin, we see that, and we see some of this reimagined later on, particularly when Atrocitus is introduced. But for now, we have this very iconic scene of Abin Sur meeting Hal Jordan. And, you know, Abin says, in your words, Green Lantern, you know, he said, it's actually this battery of power that is speaking to you. And, you know, this idea that there are races of lanterns and they assign different words to the imagery that we see. Mm-hmm. But we get this light motif. And but we see that's how Hal sees the battery. The battery is that it looks like a lantern.
Yeah.
And so Abin says that a few selected space patrolmen are given this power. Green Lantern, historically, it was actually influenced by a series of novels called The Lensman. And then Abin Sur tells Hal about the yellow impurity. And it's actually yellow radiation in this version of the story that made Abin crash. It was yellow radiation. And Gil Kane's art of Hal kneeling over Abin Sur, who was clearly struggling at this point, it's amazing. I love the retro art that we get in this.
Oh, yeah.
And so, Abin Sur gives Hal the ring. And in modern incarnations, you see the ring will seek out the bearer and just kind of pop onto their mm-hmm. finger. But here we see him, he gives him the ring and he tells him the ring needs to be charged in the battery every 24 hours. Now in modern incarnations, that's been amended a little bit to 24 hours of use. It's not necessarily 24 Earth hours.
Right. So if for instance, one day, you know, evil decides to take a day off, well, you're good. I mean, and you're just wearing the ring, then you're fine. You should be good to go. But
right. So, you know, if you're like Hal, you can just take a day off and fly a plane. Or if you're like Kyle, you can just, you know, take a day off and work at the board. So,
yeah, exactly. And then you should be okay. It's only when you're using it and you're creating constructs and the like that you'd have to worry. But which is why, you know, it's wise of Hal not to cheat and use the ring during his test flights, or Kyle uses the ring to help him draw. You know, don't waste it frivolously. Don't drain it. In that kind of manner. But yeah, with the 24-hour thing, it's interesting because a lot of people's cell phones don't last that long nowadays, and you're telling me that, an alien device with that much power can only go for about 24 hours. I can see why it's been amended, but it's a cool, like I said, it's a cool, it gives it some sort of, it's cool in the sense that there's a limitation imposed on it.
Yeah, I mean, we see that story point a lot is the idea of racing against time, that his power is finite, and he's got to get things under control before the power runs out. So that is, that's an early theme of the Silver Age Green Lantern. So,
yeah, there's something to be said about, it not being a device of unlimited power, because then, it becomes, what could we do to kind of raise the stakes a little bit more, right? And so, yeah, I kind of see why they had the 24-hour thing. And it's kind of cool when you think about it. Like you said, that real race against time aspect of it is interesting. Mm-hmm.
So Abin dies off panel, which it probably because that would have been too gruesome for the comics code at the time. Mm-hmm. Hal puts on his uniform. We don't see the energy uniform at this point. It's just a uniform. Personally, I probably would have washed the uniform first before, just popping it on. Especially, somebody who just died, but that's okay. We'll go on with the story here.
Yeah.
Hal tests the ring by lifting a cliff into the air, and he realizes that, he now possesses tremendous power. And he decides that he needs a hero name and a secret identity, so he calls himself Green Lantern after what he saw the battery as. So that's where the first part of the story ends off, is him calling himself Green Lantern. So we move on to part two, which is known as The Secret of the Flaming Spear. And we get our first look at the longtime love interest and eventual Star Sapphire. This is Carol Ferris.
Mm-hmm.
And the exposition tells us that she's the boss's daughter, of Ferris Air, that is. But she often acts like the boss. This is what the exposition says. And readers see that there's, an instant attraction between Carol and Hal.
Mm-hmm.
But before we're treated to smoochy time, there's an emergency. And that's a very common occurrence in Silver Age comics, is that the hero goes in for the big smooch scene, and oh no, there's an emergency. We get a lot of that.
Yeah, I would have. I don't know if I'd make a good hero, but like, yeah, they can wait till I finish this kiss, and then I'll go. I don't know if I get fired off the job real quick. I don't think I lost as a Green Lantern, I gotta say.
that would be a tough job. But yeah. One of the planes in this story, it's called the Flaming Spear. It's going down. So Hal rushes out, and for the first time in Hal's history, we see him recite the Green Lantern Oath. And of course, that's in iambic pentameter, and that's in brightest day and blackest night. No evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware my power, Green Lantern's light. Oh. Obviously, that's very famous and has, that's one of the most identifiable elements of the Green Lantern story.
Absolutely. And if you forget it, don't worry, because it's repeated throughout these issues that we're going to tell you. I don't know. I lost count how many times he says the oath.
Yeah, early on, it was almost every issue.
At least once.
So Hal uses his ring to slow the descent of the Flaming Spear. He saves the pilot and identifies himself as Green Lantern. And Hal realizes that the controls of the Flaming Spear were locked by outside radiation. So he uses his ring to follow the trail, which leads him to a group of baddies who have a thing called a radiation sender. It's interesting here. We see a ring function where Hal phases through the wall. And one of the criminals says, it ain't a bird, it ain't a plane, and it sure ain't Superman. I really liked that play on that old phrase.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. And so, you know, the saboteurs, you know, they try to shoot at Hal, and of course he uses his ring to deflect the bullets easily, but he's taken down by a yellow lamp because, again, that type of energy, the Green Lantern energy can't affect it. So not my favorite story point there, but you have to get used to that because there's a lot of yellow that populates Hal Jordan's environment in these early issues.
Oh yeah, it's. I'm surprised with how much it's used.
Yeah, well, like I said, they really must have liked that story point at DC at the time.
Somebody must have thought this is a great idea.
Oh, this is yeah. Somebody loved it. So the saboteurs get away, but we see Hal for the first time make a construct, and that is ice picks. And he punctures the tire of their vehicle, and then he creates three lassos, which catches the saboteurs, and he takes them directly to the FBI. So the scene shifts, and we're back at Ferris Air, and we see that its owner, Carl, who originally went by Willard, Carl Ferris, he leaves the running of Ferris Air to his daughter while he travels around the world for 2 years. And I will say this, you know, there's a progressive piece of dialogue here where Carl says, "My wife and I wanted a son to run the business, but Carol has proven herself to be just as good as any son." Yeah. And now what this does, however, is it drives a wedge between Carol and Hal because she's now the boss. And she's fully committed to making her dad proud. So there's no dating employees.
See, you should have gone for the kids beforehand. That's what I mean. Like, now he's screwed, see that?
So, yeah. Yeah, you missed that opportunity.
But I really liked what they did with Carol here. Because, again, you're right in the sense it's very progressive. Like, you don't really see her as, at least in this issue, a damsel in distress. They're really trying to sell that, okay, they're setting up right from the beginning, and then they, you know, they further try to sell her that she's the boss, like she's in charge. And I really thought that was, especially knowing when, you know, the time period that this was written, I was really impressed with that.
Likewise, you know, I really like the fact that, you know, Carol is, you know, she's a very strong character, and you know, that's something that's one of those early parts of the Silver Age stories that was very appealing to me. So
yeah.
So we then move to part three, which is again the yellow missile. And as Adam and I just talked about, I don't know whether it was Schwartz or Broom, but somebody really liked the idea of Hal having yellow all around him. You know, I look out in the world and I think, you know, you probably have to go to the Staples Center and see a Lakers game to see that much yellow in the world.
It's true.
But we see that Hal continues to be infatuated with Carol, who she continues to insist that she has to be professional. Then she says that she can't go on a date with him because she's going to a celebrity's ball and Hal isn't famous enough to be there. And wow, so we just say how strong she is, and then she channels the 1930s Lois Lane. That was a little bit abrasive there. That was rough. So, but yeah, she can't. Here's the ironic thing: is that she can't wait to see Green Lantern there,
which we all know is also Hal Jordan. So that's...
right, and so we see in the panel we see Hal kind of, you know, strut out of the office with, you know, his who's the man face, like yeah, she's into me, so.
But then that also becomes a problem afterwards when he,
exactly.
When he realizes that
she's continues to be a difficult situation.
Yeah.
So Hal goes to the ball as Green Lantern. He kisses Carol, but their kiss is interrupted by the runaway missile. So he's perplexed at first, but then he realizes that he can work with the red tip of the missile, because obviously his ring can't influence the missile except for the red tip. So he creates a net to stop the missile from hitting its target, which is a building housing hydrogen power research. So he goes to investigate the missile's origin, and we see him use his ring as kind of an X-ray to find out that the building is actually camouflaged. So he phases into the building and finds a rogue scientist who tries to hit Hal with a telescopic battering ram, which Hal defeats by transmuting the matter of the battering ram. Again, we see another ring function here, from metal to water. So after capturing the scientist, whose name is Dr. Paris, Green Lantern, we see that Paris wanted to use the H power for his own game and to stop the U.S. government from using it. And so that was the big plan that was afoot. So Hal goes back to Ferris Air, where Carol is still upset about the interrupted kiss, and she calls Hal a heel. Again, he's Green Lantern at this point. And the issue closes with she calls him a heel. It's his heel turn. And the issue closes with Hal saying, I'm in the double doghouse as both myself and Green Lantern now.
Yeah. It's I don't know how he managed to get himself in that spot like so quickly. It was pretty hilarious, I got to say. But when she called him a heel, I lost it because, you know, being such a wrestling fan, I was like, oh, that's too good. All you need is like Jerry the King Lawler to be commentating on this issue, or Bobby the Brain Heenan, or something like along those lines, would be hilarious. You know, I gotta say what really sort of intrigued me so far, in terms of the ring, what the ring is capable of doing. Like you said, in the one story where, you know, Hal is able to phase through the wall.
Yes.
You know, and that's something we rarely see today, in today's comics. And yeah. The ice picks, I thought, was a cool one. So I was really intrigued by the different constructs and the variations.
Yeah, those are just very interesting. And yeah, phasing at this point, that's more of a Barry Allen Flash thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So what would you rate that issue, sir?
I'd probably give it an 8. I mean, within the context of out of 10 or out of 5, what are we doing at first task? What do we think, 8 out of 10 or out of 5?
No, we're going to go out of 10.
Okay, so then 8,
I would say an 8 or 8.5. I mean, yeah. At times we do see some of these stories get a little heavy-handed with the yellow impurity, or the yellow weakness, I should say. But aside from that, you know, again, you know, John Broom was building his own universe here. He didn't have anything else to draw on as far as, you know, decades and decades of a character where you know what the rules are. He's making it up. And it's really interesting to see the Green Lantern mythos being built block by block.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, you got to put yourself in the space, you know, the release date space, to sort of, you know, just accept, you know, sometimes the yellow impurity was like you said, too overly used, but you just got to roll with it. I think when you're looking at back issues such as this, you just got to roll with the time period and put yourself in that kind of headspace and then judge it based on that.
Yeah. So let's move on to issue number 23.
Yes, sir.
And the cover is actually a character known as the Invisible Destroyer trying to set off an atomic bomb. Now, what's interesting is the Invisible Destroyer actually makes an appearance in Volume 3 against Kyle Rayner. So you it's a long time before you see him again, but you do see him again.
Awesome. Yeah, I like that. I like that he stuck around.
So the story is called Summons from Space, and it opens with Hal being a local celebrity as Green Lantern and going to parties in his uniform and getting plenty of attention from the ladies. So I guess the Guardians were okay with this.
Now, I assume he watched it at this point, right? Because
would hope so.
Otherwise, it's got death stench and, you know, all kinds of other sweat and whatever he's doing when he's, you know, superheroing. So I would assume.
Yeah, layers and layers of soil if he didn't watch it.
So yeah, hopefully. So at this point, I hope he's taking care of that.
So Carol Ferris, she reads about this in the newspaper, and she's not thrilled about this. So Hal nearly lets his identity slip when he says, well, you wouldn't talk to him on the phone. And Carol says, now, how did you know that? And Hal kind of stumbles and stammers. And he says that he's buddies with Green Lantern. So Carol says, well, why don't the three of us go out to dinner then together? So that creates an interesting scenario.
Oh, man, I love it. How is he going to figure this one out?
So while Hal is pondering this situation, his personal power battery starts to communicate with him. And as the Green Lantern of Sector 2814, he's called to deal with a situation on Venus. And we see another ring ability here. Hal's able to leave Earth's atmosphere, and the ring sustains his life. So he lands on Venus, and he's immediately attacked by a yellow pterodactyl. I didn't know pterodactyls were yellow ever, but evidently on this planet they were.
For this story, they are.
So his ring can't affect it directly, so it picks him up and he punches the snot out of it. He just hauls off and hits it. So, so he finds a crevice in which he can hide until the creature leaves. So you see that Hal, you know, he doesn't always rely on his ring. He's not incapable of being one step ahead of the situation.
Yeah, I like that he uses his smarts. It's very.
He finds a group of aliens that are in distress, and they are some blue-skinned cave people. And we see yet another ring function, which is the universal translator. So these Venusians are actually humanoid, even though they look different. And they say that they're being menaced by the winged raiders, which turns out to be a flock of these yellow pterodactyls. So Hal creates a giant construct of a hawk, and that traps them in a cave. And the Venusians are, of course, they're overjoyed. And Hal flies off with the thought, humans everywhere are important. Humans everywhere are important for all other humans. So basically, humans have value wherever they are. And obviously, as we just talked about, that's a very beautiful sentence.
Yeah, and he's right. And it's again, it just goes to show you the, you know, even back in these days where the stories were much simpler, how profound they could be with just a simple, well-written piece of dialogue.
Yeah.
And so, I kind of like the, by the way, the construct of the hawk. That was cool. Visually, yeah. That was.
Yeah, very intricate. And I like those kind of things. There's nothing wrong with, you know, the boxing gloves and the, you know, a bat or something like that. When you see them make something unusual, that's always been very appealing to me.
Right.
So back on Earth, Green Lantern meets with Carol, and he says, well, Hal couldn't make it. So that's pretty convenient.
and she doesn't question it, really.
she doesn't question it. So they hit it off, and this furthers the story of Carol falling in love with the Green Lantern side of Hal Jordan. And while he worries, Hal worries about impressing her as himself.
Yeah.
So that will be a long-running theme. So part two is titled The Invisible Destroyer. And Carol is once again reading about Green Lantern in the newspaper. And she shows Hal that someone has actually taken out an ad in the paper telling Green Lantern to go to 854 Wilson Avenue. And right next to that, there's also a big ad that says sale on shoes, which I thought was hilarious. So
it's like, look how progressive she is, but...
Sail on shoes.
In case you got too progressive.
Yeah. So, yeah, come get me Green Lantern. And by the way, while you're there, you know, buy yourself a new pair of sneakers.
Yeah.
So we see another panel where Hal says the oath and charges the ring. And that never gets old for me, by the way, regardless of how many times I've seen it.
It's still cool. Or
which Lantern does it. That's just something that's always intriguing to me.
It's great. It's catchy. It's powerful. It works.
So he goes to that address, and of course, it's the Invisible Destroyer. And he tries to capture the Destroyer since he's been involved in robberies, but Hal's ring doesn't affect the Destroyer. He just vanishes. So what did you think of that story point?
The fact that he just vanishes?
Yes, yeah.
How can I say this nicely? A little bit contrived.
Okay.
But no, I I think, like I said, that villain, I just think he's got a perfect name. I think his look is, he's got a cool look. I think he's got a lot going for him. And I'm, you said it wasn't until volume 3 that he came back around. Mm-hmm. I wonder why it took so long for him to resurface.
You know, that's interesting. I mean, there's always the possibility that I could be forgetting an appearance, but I really don't remember seeing him.
Well, either I trust your judgment. So if you
whether it's the Silver Age or, you know, like Tales of the Green Lantern Corps that came along in like the 80s, I don't remember seeing the Invisible Destroyer anymore. Right. So
yeah.
I do remember his Volume 3 appearance, though. Oh, wow. So Green Lantern, you know, I think I misspoke before that he was actually at the address. He was flying to the address. When he arrives at the address, he meets a physicist named Dr. Phillips. Mm-hmm. Now, Dr. Phillips thinks that he's responsible for the destroyer. And Green Lantern uses his ring to probe Dr. Phillips' subconscious. And sure enough, the destroyer pops out of Phillips' mind. And the readers learn that the destroyer is after atomic radiation because he feeds on it. So he frees himself from Dr. Phillips's mind and goes off to set off an atomic bomb. And Green Lantern uses his ring to contain the blast. And when Green Lantern and the destroyer fight, there's a mention of the antimatter universe as Green Lantern defeats the destroyer by using an antimatter blast to counteract the energy blasts from the destroyer.
Which makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. And the Hal's antimatter blast seemingly evaporates the Invisible Destroyer in the process. And we come to the end of issue 23.
I think what is the whole, you know, Invisible Destroyer thing in terms of him being kind of part of the scientist's subconscious, it gave me like some Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Yeah, very
vibes to it. So
yeah, very much a sci-fi vibe there. Yeah,
right. And I mean, the only thing missing is if the Invisible Destroyer fought the scientist, because then it would have been a callback to Superman 3, which I mean, or not callback, but it would have reminded me of Superman 3, because yeah, you know, the whole thing where they fight, you know, he fights himself, sort of. But so I was kind of waiting for that, but it didn't happen. But I'll take the Jekyll and Hyde reference, because I actually do like the Jekyll and Hyde story. So so it added to this villain's appeal. And the antimatter kind of thing, I mean, that's more prevalent in Crisis, right? So,
mm-hmm.
And Crisis wasn't it in the 80s?
I believe it was 1985.
So we're talking about 20-some-odd years.
Yeah,
difference?
So I mean, this story, I don't remember whether it was the end of 1959 or the beginning of 1960. I think it was the end of 1959.
Yeah, I think it was the end of 59. So
yeah, you know, so you're looking at 25, 26 years before. So that's the first time we see the mention of antimatter, and obviously that's been integrated into the DC mythos. So
right.
So what would you grade that overall story?
Again, I really like this issue. For you know, both stories had some quite an entertaining hook, and you know, they continue to just add little bits to the mythos every time along. Like you were saying with the antimatter, they dropped that little nugget, you know, 26 years before they needed it, but it's there. And so, yeah, I'm going to give it another 8. I really enjoyed this issue.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 9 for just, you know, how weird it is. And you know, dropping the antimatter, which, again, we do see, you know, the antimatter universe. It actually I don't even know if they mentioned it before issue 7. I know they mentioned it during Sinestro's origin. But yeah, so that obviously becomes a big part of this story here. So
right.
Yeah. So now we move on to showcase number 24 and a story called The Secret of the Black Museum. So Carol is dreaming of Green Lantern, and she's even gotten her dad to agree to let her marry Green Lantern. That she seems a little impetuous there, but we see panels that show that they've actually been dating, with Green Lantern always flying off to one emergency or another before they can really get too deeply into their dates.
And she kind of complains about that a little bit too.
Yeah, she does. Yeah.
And I'm like, you in my head, I'm thinking, you realize he's a superhero, right? Like this is one of the drawbacks of dating a superhero.
Yeah, that's what he does, as you know, every.
That would be like me, and I'm going to use this analogy, dating Harley Quinn, but then, you know, getting upset every time she finds herself in jail. Well, what the hell? Well, what do you expect? She's a criminal, you know? Like,
yeah, that's part of the price of admission there. Yeah.
Right. I mean, you know, it's part of the package.
Yeah.
You're either willing to accept it or you're not. And in my case, I'd probably roll with it, especially if we're talking about Margot Robbie's version, but that's just me.
Like I said on Twitter, you know, when we talked that one time, you're a brave man for even
one. Or crazy. So in either way it fits, whichever way you
want. So back to the story, we see that Hal is given some top secret plans by the Army for a space plane called the X-500, and he's supposed to look these over, but he promptly loses them. And he has a partial memory of being bumped in the Ferris commissary. And he uses his ring to probe his own mind, which I thought was a very interesting ring function here.
That was really cool.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Have we ever seen that since? Just a quick question. Has that ever been done again?
Yeah, I believe so. I can't think of any specific example right now. Yeah. But... So he uses his ring to probe his own mind, and he realizes that he also saw the same guy the previous week at an amusement park. So Hal flies to the park as Green Lantern, just in time to see a roller coaster. The coaster cars jump the track. And guess what color the coaster cars are? Can you guess?
Let me just take a quick guess. Now, this is the wild speculation on my part, but I'm going to say yellow.
Wow. Yeah, amazing. Yeah, you're clairvoyant. Yeah.
You know, Nostradamus was probably a relative of mine, or, you know, an ancestor. That's the only thing I can tell you. I don't know.
So Hal makes springs to stop the fall. So I will say that was interesting to see him, you know, deal with it in that manner. And guess what? Carol Ferris, she's at the park, too. So, John Broom really liked making life complicated for Hal, but I guess that's the name of the game. I mean, that's, you know, when you're a writer, that's what you do.
How can we put roadblocks for this relationship?
So Hal starts to talk to her, but he sees the guy from the commissary and he flies after him. So Green Lantern ends up in an exhibit of explosives. So we see another ring function here, which is very interesting. He creates construct microphones to map the building and let him know where the people are inside of this building. And so he surprises the people in this building, but in turn, he's ambushed by the man whom he was tracking. And he just calls him the Dark Man. And so Hal is rendered unconscious, and... though they're not named, they're actually spies for some kind of an unspecified country, and they intend to send the plans for the X-500 to their country via a rocket. So they clamp Green Lantern into a chair beneath the rocket so that he'll be killed as the rocket lifts off. But Green Lantern wakes just in time and creates a protective bubble around himself. He melts his bonds. He creates a construct prison for the spies, and then he tracks down the rocket, and he returns the plans to the Army, but the drama is not over yet. He's confronted by Carol, who assumed that he was about to propose to her earlier, and she yells at him to stay. She yells at him to stay in place until he's done. And so the last panel is Green Lantern befuddled by the idea that he was about to propose, because that was not obviously in the plans.
You know, for every step they take to make her progressive, it's like, here she comes off as like, here's the analogy, and no offense to any of these people, but It reminds me of, like, in certain instances, again, most of the time she's, you know, a competent businesswoman, she's the authoritative figure. But in certain instances, she comes off as this...
Entitled?
Well, not only that, but the way she's, like, all gaga over Hal. It's kind of like, a teenage girl at a Justin Bieber concert. It's like, good little lady, grow up, man. Like, he's a freaking superhero. He hasn't, you know, he's got other, okay, in this case, he knows you exist because his alter ego is in love with you. But he's got bigger fish to fry at this particular moment. Like, you know, you're not the center of the universe. Yeah. I would have loved back in the day, you know, I could just picture, you know, this era's version of Green Lantern and this era's version of Superman meeting up at a coffee shop, discussing what the heck they're going to do about their situation, because their alter egos of Clark Kent and Hal Jordan are in love with these two women, but these two women are at present totally focused on their superhero self. So that would be like, you ever know that, you ever see that that video series, was it the Superhero Cafe, where it's Batman and Superman at the coffee shop?
Oh yes, that's hilarious.
Now, yeah, so imagine Green Lantern and Superman, but drawn in the art style of this day and age. I'll pay somebody to do that. to come up with that scenario. I love it, right? But that's what I kept thinking reading this issue. But her father was like, okay, I'm just gonna say yes, because I know there's no shot in hell that Green Lantern is gonna propose to her. So I'm just gonna go for it. And just to get her off my back, and then it's his problem, which is the scenario that I imagine playing through his head. But really what stuck out to me here was a couple of things. I love the construct. You mentioned the springs and you know, he creates a bunch of different things. The springs, the cage. So much ring action going on here in this issue, which I really liked. Just how easily, like, you know, how willing the government seems to be giving away these top secret plans in an era where they were, you know, really extra keen on covering things up, really, when you think about it. I mean, just now they're releasing footage of supposed UFOs, right? So
yes, I saw that.
Them being that open back then, I find it very hard to believe. You know, that flipping with plans and technologies, yeah. So that was a little bit. It made me laugh. It made me chuckle. But again, it's a sign of the, you know, the time that this is being written in, right?
Sure. So we go on to part two of this issue. The story called "The Creature That Couldn't Die." So it opens up with Hal piloting, while Carol watches from the control tower. She asks him from the tower to take her on a drive, which he answers okay with the smoke from his plane, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, she's not overly impressed with his showboating, but they do go on the drive. So Carol tells Hal in the dream that she was preparing to marry him, that she had a dream and she was preparing to marry him, but only to make Green Lantern jealous. So when Green Lantern doesn't show, she marries Hal. So on their way from the church, a painter falls from a skyscraper, and Hal is forced to put his ring on and save the man. So we get the not so subtle hint that maybe subliminally, Carol knows that Hal and Green Lantern are one and the same, because she sees this play out in a dream.
Mm-hmm.
But just as she's done recounting this dream, the road comes to an abrupt end and the car tumbles off of it. So Hal's forced to play out the dream by using his ring in front of Carol to create a construct parachute to save them. But she fainted, so she didn't say it.
That is the ultimate convenience. I mean, as I read that, I just kept flashing back to the Smallville episodes, because I don't know how many times on that show, Lex figured out that Clark had these abilities. But then throughout the course of the episode, we get bopped on the head by something. And then, oh, I forgot.
So back in the story, Hal sees that part of the mountain road was wiped out. And soon some scientists, they drive up and they tell him that they were secretly experimenting with cosmic rays that created literally a monster. So, you know, it's a wonder that any kid reads a comic book and ever wants to do a scientific experiment, because it never ends well.
Right. I mean, that would be a class that I wouldn't be as a kid especially back in these days. I'm not going to science class. Just totally skipping right over that.
So this monster is ripping up the Coast City Bridge, and blasts from Hal's power ring don't phase it. Worse yet, it fires beams from its eyes, and guess what color they are? Do you have a guess for me, Adam?
Well, hang on. Let me channel my telepathic powers for that. My precognition or whatever. I'm going to say go 2 for 2 here with yellow.
Hey, you win the Cupid doll. There you go.
I should play the lottery today. I feel,
So Hal remembers that cosmic rays bombard the Earth constantly. And that is true, by the way. And you do get a little bit of science in these Green Lantern issues. And I always thought that was interesting. So he makes this gigantic test tube construct, and he places it over the creature. And the creature shrinks into a lifeless blob. And as it's being shrunk, it thanks Green Lantern for stopping it. Because again, going back to the comics code, we didn't see heroes kill back then.
Right.
So the story concludes with Carol reading the newspaper about Green Lantern's adventure. And she assumes that while she was unconscious, Hal was asking what he was seeking for help. And so he couldn't possibly be Green Lantern. So that wasn't him. So you end that issue with her not thinking that they are one and the same.
And I mean, it's you're kind of like, really, you know, when you read that, like, you just accepted that explanation with no questioning, no qualms. But then when you think about it a little and you think, well, okay, how many decades did Lois go thinking that Clark and Superman were two different people? So, I mean, at some point, you kind of just let it go and be like, yeah, it was just, again, this is my mantra, right, on this particular episode. It was a sign of the times that they were written, right?
Right, yeah. Again, like I said, I mean, that's one of those themes that plays out over many issues, is, you know, how being both himself and Green Lantern around her and trying to disguise that, and she suspects at times, and other times she's like, no, that can't possibly be it. But we see this issue, and again, this was the first 3-issue run, showcase 22 through 24 of any Hal Jordan story. And so what would you give that issue, sir?
Well, this particular issue, I think it's a 7.
Okay. I'd go a little bit higher. I still like how weird it was. I'd give it an 8.5.
Fair enough, yeah. Yeah. No, still good. Still enjoyable, for sure. The giant monster really kind of, you know, gives it that horror-esque kind of feel. You know, that classic horror kind of thing.
Yes, that classic horror vibe. Yes.
Yeah.
So, after those 3 issues of Showcase sold well, DC decided to give Green Lantern his own title. And Green Lantern number 1, with a cover date of August 1960, debuted with Hal Jordan as the centerpiece. And it kicks off with a story called Planet of the Doomed Men. And while testing out a new aircraft, Hal's astral form is taken from his body and transported to the world of the Guardians. And so we see the Guardians of the universe for the first time. And they seek to know who took over the role of Green Lantern in that space sector, and that's 2814, from Abed Sur. And so Hal recounts the events that led him to becoming Green Lantern. So the reason why they go back and do that is, you got to think back in, it really, when I grew up too, back in the 70s, but especially before that, if you missed an issue on the stands, you may well have missed it, period. Right. So you see a lot of exposition and a lot of review with characters, because there's the idea that when someone picked up an issue of a comic, it might well be the first time they had any contact with that character at all. So you see a lot of these little things that kind of review past events to kind of catch up the reader to the current issue. So Hal recounts these events that led to him becoming Green Lantern, and convinced that Hal is worthy of the title, the Guardians erase his memory and reunite his astral form with his physical body, deciding that now is not the right time for Hal to know of their existence. So, returning to his dressing room at the Ferris aircraft.
Just to interrupt for a sec. I really did like the appearance of the Guardians in this episode or this issue, and the way it was done with the sort of astral projection, or however you'd word it.
Yes.
It was really clever. And the fact that, this idea that he's not ready, he's not prepared to have us reveal ourselves to him in the fullest extent. Mm-hmm. So I really thought that was clever and very, very leaning heavily into like sci-fi kind of vibes, which I enjoyed.
Yeah, I like the idea that, that there's kind of a proving period for Green Lantern. There's a time when he's evaluated before they decide to, eventually say, yeah, he's a full-time Green Lantern. And of course, we learn later on in issue 7 that there's a very good reason for that. So,
right.
So returning to his dressing room at Ferris Aircraft Company, Hal gets a message from his power battery asking him to defend beings on the planet Kalor. So traveling out that way, he finds a race of primitive humanoids being terrorized by a giant creature called the Draig. And it can fire mental bolts of energy. So he battles with the creature, and it's also a race against time, as we said before his ring loses its charge. So Hal uses his power ring to freeze the creature in ice and places it in a glacier where it won't fall out. And Hal returns to Earth with just enough time, with just enough power in his ring before it loses its charge. So what did you think of that story?
I really liked how he solved the problem. I thought, again, to me, it's the combination of using your brains and thinking the solution through before just leaping into action using the ring, without thought. So I really like how they've throughout every issue we've talked about so far, Hal's been able to do that. And I really appreciated that. That's one of the things that they've gone to great lengths to sort of highlight is his intelligence.
And I like the story point too. I like Earth-based stories, but at the same time, you get this idea that although Hal has his own problems and Earth has its own threats, he's not just limited to that his space sector is important. And so he's going to other planets and he's solving problems for other races of beings. And I just think that that's very appealing for this type of story. That's essential for this type of story.
Well, I mean, and also you said, DC wanted a sci-fi series at the time. So, I mean, if you have a sci-fi series and you don't take it to space or to other planets, you're kind of doing something wrong. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
So I do love when they take things off Earth, even though I do like the Earthbound stuff as well. Because the best stories have a balance.
Wow, well put. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and that's what Green Lantern has. A balance of those type of stories. So,
right. So
we get another story in this issue called The Menace of the Giant Puppet. And if you've ever seen Green Lantern number one or the facsimile edition that DC just released,
which
you
see beautiful.
That, oh, it is awesome. So if you see any of the facsimiles, definitely pick one up because it's printed just the way that it would have been in 1960, even with like some of the ads that were printed at the time. So it's like holding that piece of history in your hand. So I would definitely recommend to readers to pick one of those up.
Yeah.
Definitely. So we get the story called Menace of the Giant Puppet. So as Kara laments over yet another date with Green Lantern that ended prematurely because he had to go save a man who was drowning, the Lantern is presently participating in the annual Coast City Parade, and his mind is elsewhere. But instead of romance like Carol, he's thinking about a series of bizarre crimes that have been plaguing the city. So in each case, a law-abiding citizen tries to rob a place and is captured by Green Lantern. Mm. Now, in each situation, the person caught claims to have been controlled as if like a puppet. So after a series of these puppet master crimes, Green Lantern is convinced that there's somebody controlling these other people. And Hal is suddenly snapped out of his thoughts when one of the balloons in the parade, which was made to look like a giant puppet, suddenly comes to life and starts shooting at him with a giant gun. Now, he's able to defeat it, but later on, while taking Carol to a dance, the puppet master, and we see that he's the one behind this giant puppet, he uses his hypno ray to bring Green Lantern to his secret hideout. So Hal's able to free himself, and he actually uses a construct to like make the puppet master into a puppet, and he kind of dances him over to the police. So yeah, gives him a little dose of humiliation before turning him in.
Yeah, hang on a second here. I like, again, to me, one of the successes of this this kind of villain, and you show how kind of outsmarts him and uses his own methods against him.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, I like the dichotomy between the two stories. You get this space-based story, and then we come back to Earth and see that there are plenty of threats still here. So again, this mythos is solid on so many fronts. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. So I found this, you know, number one, very satisfying.
Yeah. I thought going in, when I saw the cover and the name of the villain, I thought, I don't know how this is going to go. But it actually, you know, the preceding story was so well done, and how defeated the villain, I thought, was in the second story, was key to making it work for me.
Yeah, like I said, I really like this one. As far as ratings go, I'm going to give it a 9. You know, there's not a whole lot to dislike about it. So, you know, even though it looks like it's going to be a really kind of, you know, silly story, it really isn't. You really kind of see Hal's role as a cosmic protector, as an interstellar policeman. And so again, seeing the Guardians, of course, you know, the role that they play in the Green Lantern mythos, you know, obviously you can't help as a Green Lantern fan to be intrigued by seeing them for the first time.
Oh yeah. It's a quintessential, you know, moment for sure, for the mythos. So, you know, as we go along, you know, as we've shown, as we've seen with, you know, in the Sinestro stories and the John story that we already covered, and even to an extent with why am I blanking on his name?
Guy Gardner. Yes.
Yeah. You see their presence, and you just continue to evolve and grow. And by the way, I just want to so I'm going to give my grade, which is also a 9. I really, again, really enjoyed this issue, and as a kickoff, as a quote-unquote, you know, kickoff issue, because technically Spotlight was the ones that sort of kicked things off, but as a number one, I agree with you, it's very satisfying. And I just want to alert, and it would definitely be something that would cause me to continue to pick, like if I was reading this back then, I would want to continue to pick it up, for sure.
Yeah, there's a very unique atmosphere around Hal Jordan. I mean, with when you look at his story as compared to other heroes at the time, it's very different. So yes, even, you know, had I been alive in 1960 and seen that, I definitely would have been pulled in right away.
Right. Yeah. Agreed. And I just want to, you know, let our listeners know that this was actually like we're referencing the episodes we did with about John and Guy and Sinestro. Normally, you'd think that the Hal's story would come first, and that was our plan. But during editing, we had issues with the file, and so it was lost, and then we had to re-record. So this is why you're hearing our spotlight on Hal.
Yeah, and I think in a couple of those episodes, we actually meant, you know, I made a, there were a couple of references to this, you know, this episode, and I'm like, oh, okay, I hope people aren't too confused by this, but
so if you're confused, sorry about that, but I just wanted to give you a perspective of why Hal was coming at this juncture and wasn't the first one out of the gate. Yeah. So that's why.
Yeah. So we're going to keep, you know, in future episodes, keep laying down the foundations of the characters, give you their origins. And then we have some big plans for the future. So yes. Adam and I have been in discussion. So definitely keep coming back. You know, we appreciate our listeners so much, and we've got a lot of great things on tap for you. So yeah, definitely keep coming back.
We've got a couple of guests lined up too, right?
Yes, indeed. Oh, yes. So, we're working hard for you people. Even though we don't get paid for this, except for when I say Shway and Adam gives me $5.
Yeah. It's Monopoly money, but hey, it still counts.
I have to go say checks in the mail.
I mean, after all, I'm not the $1 million man, even though on the wrestling podcast, I pretend to be. I just asked Steven about that. But it's really fun to, you know, talk about this character with you. It's a character that I've really grown to love over the years. I mean, in terms of the branch of Green Lantern in general, and, you know, and then so, and, you know, the stuff that we're, like I said, we want to cover all of it as, you know, time allows and as we go along here. But we have specific, we're going to do some long form stuff on certain story arcs. And like I said, we got guests and, you know, hopefully we'll be doing weekly reviews of the Green Lantern HBO series when it starts. And we're going to go back and discuss the animated movies, the animated series. So many plans. We hope you're enjoying the episodes, you know, so far, and you'll continue to come on this journey through the different sectors with us. But that pretty much wraps up the show this week. So, Donnie, if people want to continue discussing all the awesome events surrounding the Green Lantern mythos in this, the character's 80th birthday, or where can they do that?
Hey, if you want to talk to me, I am on Twitter as the Emerald Enthusiast. I'm always down to talk about Green Lantern. I do product reviews, and of course, I talk about any news, and you know, I give my opinions on various comic book related things. So anytime you want to talk there, you can hit me up in the, you know, the comment section or send me a message, and I'm more than happy to talk with anyone who likes our show.
Awesome. And if you want to talk to me specifically after watching Donnie's product reviews and want to concoct a plan of how to, you know, sneak into his house and steal some of those things, you can do that at Adam_LeafsFan. We can also chat about that on the Multiverse Musings Podcast Network on Facebook. What you do there is you go there, you request admittance into the group. Either myself or one of my co-hosts will add you, and we can happily continue the discussion there. But, you know, we got to give, you know, props to all the different Green Lanterns, of course, because they're all special and they're all unique in their own way.
Well
but
said.
We have to remember that Hal Jordan is forever, from the first time he recites the oath to the last.
Oh, and I got to say this. I'm like, now I got to worry about you too, because Phil Bova from the podcast of all already said that he wants to come steal my Hal Jordan sideshow bust. So great. I'll have to set up an electric fence.
Yeah. What I'll do is, now that I know that, we'll coordinate. I'll try to message him, but you know, getting through that close was difficult because I'm like, what can I do? This, you don't know how much thought goes into that closing statement there. So, boy, folks, you can start a drinking game every time I come up with something new for that phrase.
Right. We have a lot of fun with that. So
yeah, definitely.
So speaking of drinking, I'm going to go get a pizza and some soda with Guy and John at Warriors. Remember, everyone, wear a mask, wash your hands, continue to social distance, and protect your sector.
Stay safe, and so long.
Of all the lanterns who have ever worn the ring, there was one whose light shined brightest. At first, his humanity was thought to be a weakness, and yet it proved to be his greatest strength.
Servitude, where every individual is just an extension of your mind? No thanks. And I won't let you use the core against the rest of the universe.
What's the matter?
I just learned the thing this morning.
In brightest day,
in blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware.